coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 15 of The Curious Realm. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas. We are officially in the midst of South by Southwest. Welcome back, live events. Thank you to all the HC Productions crew that is out there slaughtering it. You guys are killing it this year, man. Thank you to all you folks. Thank you to all the event engineers out there that are making shows happen. Welcome back, industry. It's so nice, isn't it? Tonight, we have a couple of guests. Our first guest is our good friend, Archbishop James Cloud. We will be talking about Russian end time prophecies, Russia and their relation to Gog and Magog from the book of Ezekiel in the Bible, the story of the dream that Daniel interpreted for King Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 2. And how it relates to the ongoing issue in Russia, as well as the prophecies of Fatima and how they relate to what is currently going on in Russia. That will be the first hour. And get ready, folks. It's going to be really intense this evening. We've got that followed by new good friend, Kathleen Martin. Kathleen Martin is the author of Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted, as well as Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Kathleen has worked with MUFON for years. She has set up their protocols for their experiencer model, what to do and how to handle an experiencer and getting data from an experiencer, because it's totally different than getting just raw data from a field where there might be impressions or burn marks or something like that. So we're going to go into the intricacies of that, as well as her life growing up steeped in this and how it led to her being an intergenerational contactee by being related to Betty and Barney Hill of abduction fame. Really the first abduction case truly chronicled. So once again, some really interesting conversation tonight. Kathleen was a pre-record. We had a little bit of an issue the other day with our video system, so the video might be jerky, but I assure you the audio is spot on, folks. So sorry about that. Sorry about the streaming issues we have been having here on Facebook lately. It seems like those should have been taken care of. There were a bunch of updates that happened to our system and kind of slammed us all at once. So figuring all that out is always fun, but welcome back to Full Resolution. Tonight, man, I can't wait to get into it. We are going to be getting into that right after our News of the Week segment here, brought to you by the Facebook. Stop on by and join the Curious Realm group. Over 800 members there carrying on conversation about the esoteric, strange things that mainstream media might pop up in front of you, but doesn't really want to have a conversation about. First article out of Catholic News Agency. Here's what you need to know about the consecration of Russia and Ukraine by Pope Francis. That's right, folks. The Pope has officially consecrated the Russia and Ukraine to the Holy Mother. So we will be getting into that and how it ties into Fatima. In addition to that, out of The Guardian, it's the right thing to do. The 300,000 person volunteer hackers coming together to fight Russia. Out of fizz.org, California's first lab-grown mosquitoes may take flight. That's kind of disturbing. WashingtonPost.com tells us, fearing political violence in 24, judges sentenced January 6 defendants to probation through the next election. One of the members said probation. Wow. Vice.com, Ukrainian special forces have plans for an insurgency against Russia. And out of Hill.com, the Senate unanimously approves making daylight savings time permanent. How about that, folks? All that and more coming to you straight out of our Facebook group. Come on by, join it. Curious Realm is the name of the group. Our guest in this first part, Archbishop James Cloud. He is an exorcist in the Order of St. Michael and the Archangel. He is also author of Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. Welcome back, James Cloud. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic, man. Like I said, other than my gout issue going on, don't know if I don't know if there's a patron saint of gout, but as a Catholic, I should look it up because as a sufferer, I should know it. You know, I mean, we got Saint Blaise. He's the patron saint of sore throat sufferers.
Hey, there you go.
So we got one for everything.
I feel sorry for the patron saint of hemorrhoids, though.
That's right. Well, let's start breaking this down real quick, Father, because this is a thick topic and one that, if you're a Bible studier, if you've gone through, read the Bible, not just excerpts, things like that, you may or may not have run across Daniel, depending on which version of the Bible you're reading. It's interesting, but let's start breaking down how Russia plays into the end time prophecies of the Bible from Daniel, Ezekiel. A lot of people say the Book of Revelations is an end time prophecy, but I really choose to see that as like a letter to a people of faith and what to do moving forward and what you're going to face than an actual like prophecy, because prophecy by definition, like, you gotta have an out. Otherwise Nostradamus is a prophet, but he's not, because all he does is say, oh, this is gonna happen, but there's no way out. And with prophets, it's the fact of there's always a pivot point, there's always a point where you can choose to decide to do the opposite and do what's right. And if you don't, God said this horrible thing's gonna happen. So you might want to listen. And I think that's important to distinguish between prophecy and prognostication.
Definitely. Definitely. You know, when you're dealing with prophecy, so a lot of times probably 99% of the prophecies are exactly what you said. You know, there's a way out. If this doesn't happen, then this is going to occur. Usually repentance and changing, you know, changing their hearts back to Christ and in the Old Testament back to God.
Yeah.
So, I have a different take on Revelation.
Okay.
Because I've studied end times for years, and an interesting point that a lot of people make just with like a, you know, that scary number 666.
Yeah.
Well, it goes in the early church, they understood it as Nero Caesar or Nero. Yes. Caesar Nero.
Yeah.
However, that was written after Nero's death. So it didn't mean Nero at the time. That's why it says he was, is not, and will be again.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact of the Caesar to come after.
Yeah. Yeah. And that the characteristics will be like Nero, to look for a man like that. And that's exactly what Antichrist will be. But going back to Russia, back in the old prophecies, it was called the land of Magog. So the Magogians basically lived there. And so when the prophecies in Ezekiel 38 and 39 talking about the war of Gog Magog, the contemporaries of the day knew exactly who Ezekiel was talking about. You know, fast forward about 3,000 years, and the title of Magog kind of disappeared into the mists of history. But we know that the region from ancient history occupies Russia. Also, interestingly, parts of Ukraine. So, and when you read Prophecy of Gog Magog, that the war that would occur, Gog is of the Magogians. Gog is of Magog and the leader of Magog. So technically right now, Putin would be Gog and Magog is Russia. However, Putin, you know, the leadership could change at some point and someone else will be Gog. But as it stands currently, Putin is Gog, G-O-G. And
yes,
in that prophecy, it talks about, I'll just put it in modern terms, because they can, the listeners can look at Ezekiel 38 and 39 and see some of the older names, plus some names that are still current. You'll have Russia, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Gaza, Libya, Ethiopia, and Turkey, I believe it is. They'll all form a coalition to come against Israel. And that's the actual war of Gog and Magog, according to Ezekiel.
Yeah.
However, a lot of rabbis right now are saying that what's going on in Ukraine is the beginning of Gog and Magog, the war predicted in 38 and 39 of Ezekiel. So it's something to think about. And about a year ago, I God has spoke to me in the past, and I just speak as he tells me. So I've learned that's just the best way to go. And rise or fall, you know, that's just what I do. And so, but it's, but when he tells me something, it's never been wrong. So that's the good thing. But as the human side of me goes, oh, you're just, you're a little zealot. You're just imagining things. You're just this, you're just that. But I've learned just to speak it. And if I look like a fool, I'm a fool.
Sure.
But about a year ago, God told me that the war of Gog and Magog would begin within 2 years. And
you have said numerous times on our show that we are in the midst of the beginnings of end time. And that's not to say, like, you know, 700 Club style or anything like that, you know, where it's like, no, you need to send your money now.
Yeah, no.
Assure your place. No, but it's the fact of things are aligning. There is an overwhelming, Father, just movement in the world that's pulling people in all directions.
Sure. Well, and then you have good old Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, and all of the political leaders of the West falling in line with the Great Reset. You know, the slogan "Build Back Better."
Sure.
That's actually a World Economic Forum slogan. And every Western leader in this last election used it as their slogan or in their slogan speeches, because it's about resetting things to a global economy, a single digital currency, resetting the idea of nation states. So that it's more of a global citizen rather than, a U.S. citizen.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, I listened to both sides when the, you know, foreign relation experts talk. And, you know, one side is saying, you know, Russia bad, Ukraine good, that kind of stuff. The other side is saying, well, Russia and China are the only two big powerhouses left that are more focused on nation state rather than a global community.
Yeah.
And so it necessarily has to be brought under control, or made to submit at some level.
Mm. Yeah. So that is something that has definitely been hypothesized by guests on this show. That has definitely been, excuse me. I have even posited the fact of, do not be surprised if you see basically what people akin to Project Bluebeam enacted, which mm-hmm. was to basically falsify a second coming to unify people and then double whammy with an invasion. But this dude is going to be the one that can save us all. You know, there's a lot of plays that can be had with this, but I specifically want to read real quick the end of Ezekiel 38, which is actively a declaration from the sovereign Lord. In my zeal and fiery wrath, I declare that at the time there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. The fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the beasts of the field, every creature that moves along the ground and all the people on the face of the earth will tremble at my presence. The mountains will be overturned, the cliffs will crumble, and every wall will fall to the ground. I will summon a sword against Gog on all my mountains, declares the sovereign Lord. Every man's sword will be against his brother. I will execute judgment on him with plague and bloodshed. I will pour down torrents of rain, hailstones, and burning sulfur on him and on his troops and the many nations with him. And so I will show my greatness and my holiness, and I will make myself known in the sight of many nations. They will know that I am the Lord. That's a powerful statement.
Absolutely.
And the fact of, oh, yeah, you think you're the one in control. Let me show you what's going to happen. And literal fire, brimstone, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, you know, it's all right there. So for those that take it literally, for those that take it interpretively, what are we looking at as far as what's happening right now? Where are we in that path of the end of Ezekiel 38?
We're close. We're not there yet. You know, when that really strikes out, because during the War of Gog and Magog, you're going to see Russia and that Arab Federation I spoke about go against Israel. Already right now, Israel is kind of getting on Russia's crap list, if you will.
Oh, yeah. Been there because for a hot minute.
Oh, yeah. But it's getting hotter with the Ukraine thing.
Yep.
And from what I understand, Russia transferred a lot of troops down to Syria pretty recently.
Mm.
And so you got a lot of those folks down in there, and you know that aligns perfectly with what you know Ezekiel is talking about there. And so it's one of those things that makes you pause, reconsider a little bit, because you know you can't, it's just a rule of thumb, you can't trust mass media to give you the whole story.
Sure.
You know, it'll be slanted one way or the other depending on which program you're listening to. But, you know, there's always more going on behind the scenes, and I look for those deep currents. You know, most people get stuck on it's like an ocean. You know, they're stuck on the waves that the wind is blowing at the top, but the currents underneath are actually moving the oceans around the globe.
Mm.
And that's what I look for. And in any, you know, modern event, series of events, what have you, and looking at the long game of what, you know, folks might be aiming for. And so,
yeah,
it shows me that, hey, you know, it's close. There's things going on that folks need to be aware of. And honestly, if folks don't change the path they're on, all of the prophecies are going to come true. And that's real. That's you're out. You know, that's the key there. But again, a lot of people don't want to align themselves with God. They would, unfortunately, most are going to align themselves with this one world government.
Yeah.
And of course, that means taking the mark on their forehead or right hand. That means submitting to really a socialist dictatorship. Because that's really the structure of like Daniel's vision, like you were talking about.
Before we get into that real quick, I actively want to read a previous part of Ezekiel 38, which I think is where a lot of people are pulling this from, especially the unwalled villages reference, because you have to remember the actual, like we learned a couple weeks ago, folks, when all this started with historian Richard B. Spence, the actual name Ukraine just means like front land. It was not an actual settled area. It was this loosely associated area that was in constant flex depending on the ranges of the countries that surrounded it. The fact that they are referred to in this as, or at least people are interpreting this as being them, I will invade a land of unwalled villages. I will attack a peaceful and unsuspecting people, all of them living without walls and without gates and bars. I will plunder and loot and turn my hand against the resettled ruins and the people gathered from the nations, rich in livestock and goods, living at the center of the land, Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish and all her villages will say to you, "You have come to plunder? Have you gathered your hordes to loot, to carry off silver and gold, to take away livestock, goods, and seize much plunder?" Yeah, certainly seems like almost exactly like Russia, what Russia is doing right now.
Absolutely.
And like we said with Richard B. Spence, this is something that intelligence analysts could have seen coming, you know.
And probably did, honestly.
Yeah. So why allow it? Why allow it to happen? You know, why even still be sitting next to complacent? We've placed some sanctions on Russia.
Sure.
That's it. You know, even the UN has yet to fully buck up. I mean, yeah, hats off to the Ukraine, man, because they have come in full force and protecting their motherland, at least what they have is a motherland. But that's just it. This isn't a case of like national identity, because like our professor of history said the other day, the Ukrainian people don't necessarily have a quote national history. They were a border front.
Yeah.
They were an ever changing borderland between the Middle East and the lands to the north, Russia, and the lands to the east, India, and all that. You know? So interesting. But let's start getting into the prophecy of Daniel real quick.
Okay. Well, to give a little background so folks know, Daniel had a dream or a vision one time, and he accurately predicted all of the major world empires that would come to rise within, in and around Israel. Because you got to remember, Israel is God's timepiece. Always has been, always will be. But that being said, this statue of Nebuchadnezzar that Daniel saw, it was divided into different metals, from the head being gold, which meant, you know, the current Babylonian Empire, down to the 10 toes, which was iron mixed with clay. Now, the idea of iron and clay being formed together to form, you know, a 10-toed base of a statue is that iron and clay don't mix.
Yeah.
You know, it might hold its form for a short time, but then because they don't mix, they fracture and break apart. Well, this, interestingly enough, the UN has divided the world into 10 regions. The UN really is the final world government. It's just, you know, it's like the cross-eyed redheaded cousin or something right now, hey. As far as how it functions.
Hey, I'm redheaded. Just play. But,
nothing against redheads. Nothing against redheads. My dad was a redhead too. But eventually, there will come a point. Something is going to precipitate the world throwing all authority and taking all authority from the UN. You're already seeing some of that along different nations, third world nations and whatnot. But, and honestly, under the Biden administration, you're seeing, you know, America is a follower right now, not a leader. The,
sure.
The European Union, Germany, of all places, for God's sake, was more of a leader than, and France.
Yeah.
More of a leader. And Biden just kind of, with America, just said, okay, we'll do what you do. Instead of, you know, traditionally, America has been the lead. America has been the spearhead, if you will.
Yes. For yes.
Different things. On this, we're more like the part of the luggage rack, just going along with everyone else. But that shows you the temperature of America right now and who the people have elected. And I have to assume that's what the people want is globalism, America's preeminence to decrease, to kind of meld into a global community, you know, skipping rope and slapping each other on the butt or something. I don't know. But people have weird things, you know, or if they're into Star Trek, they think, you know, it'll be the Federation or something. But the way it's going, like I was saying earlier, the UN has divided the world into 10 regions. There's your 10 toes. And then trying to form them into one with all of the different cultural, racial, religious differences, it'll never stick. You know, there you might have the leaders, big smiles, you know, shaking hands, but I guarantee you, the bigger the smile, the bigger the knife. And so at the end, it does crumble. At the end, but keep in mind, through it all, Israel and Jerusalem in particular is a stumbling block. It is a heavy stone burden to the rest of the nations. And it is. And it, you know, it is. And it was supposed to be. Because this is another thing too. You know, a lot of theologians kind of subscribe to the idea that the church replaced Israel and that, you know, Israel basically ceased as a nation after Vespasian's destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. That's not the case, because you read in I believe it's Corinthians, St. Paul is talking about how we're beholding a mystery, how for a time Israel be punished and separated from their land. But at the end, they'll come back as a nation in order for all of humanity who trust in Christ to be saved. Mm. So, and that happened in 1948. So that was the final click on the countdown to whatever time frame God has for that. When Israel became a nation again, that started the countdown to the end. And of course, in that same year, the UN was founded. And so, you know, you don't have to have a broad imagination if you're a student of prophecy and of the scriptures to see exactly what's going on. You know, and the punishment of Israel was immense. I mean, scattered as a people for almost 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And then the Holocaust. But the Holocaust served the purpose of reinstituting the nation of Israel. So there's, you know, as a theologian, you have to look at the broader pieces at play on the chessboard.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, the Holocaust was terrible. You know, if a person could go back in time and murder Hitler as a child, sure, of course, you know, snuff that little sucker out. But you can't do that. So everything works in accordance with God's plan, even the demons. You know, and even, you know, you were talking earlier about the abductions and whatnot and experiencers.
Yeah.
I was abducted at 4. I'm an experiencer. My whole family was an experiencer.
Yeah.
And generationally going back. And so, and when I walked around holding hands with this golden alien thing, they said, we serve the great king. And they're not like the other ones, but, you know, we serve the great king.
Yeah.
And you know, as an adult, I look back and go, oh, I know who that is. And so even they're subjected to God's will and plan.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be too shocked either Project Bluebeam or some false flag attack. You know, aliens are attacking us and killing us, blah, blah, blah. You know, they've been preparing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of the world with their alien invasion movies and stuff for years. And the reality is they're the watchers. They're the sons of God, the Beniha Elohim of Genesis 6 that crossbred with humans. They're the divine council out of Psalm 81, I believe it is. So everything that happens, good, bad, ugly, or otherwise, furthers God's plan. Even Lucifer and the demons have to have only a certain leash that they can do, and they do more on certain people because those people are given a longer leash to do something in their life.
And for those of you who may doubt this, let's take a hop back to the good old book of Job, where God's just straight kicking it with his angels up in heaven, talking about, like, things are so fantastic, things are so great, that even this dude who isn't even a Jew loves me. Look at him. Look at him. He can't stop singing my praises. Poof, up pops Satan in the middle of the heavenly court, like, hey, how's it going, guys? Job, huh? Cool, cool. Mind if I toy with him? Yeah, you can do anything but kill him. You can do anything but kill him. Well, at first it was you could do anything but touch a hair on his head.
Yeah.
Which is why he went after his cattle and his children and his wife and his land. And so, yeah, like even the demons are a part of the heavenly plan as a whole. When you look at the forest and the trees of the situation,
absolutely.
And you know, it's pretty rare to hear a man of the cloth who wears a collar say that, Archbishop. Do you think that is your experience as What is it that gives you that unique lens to the scripture?
Well, I love the scriptures. I love my Lord Jesus Christ with every fiber of my being, and I would happily die for him. I have no qualm about that in the slightest. Someone put a gun to my head and said, renounce Christ. I'd go, pull the trigger. Mm. It's all good. Do it. But I think the things I've went through in my life too, from being an abductee at 4, then having, special insights and stuff after that, being able to see here.
Yeah.
Spiritual entities and whatnot, the shadow people growing up, me finally getting in to the position as an exorcist and taking the battle back to them, and protecting those that can't protect themselves. Just also, I love history. I love science. I love quantum mechanics, quantum physics. I love to understand the broader things. And, I often smile to myself when, these atheistic or at least agnostic scientists are claiming, about DMT, the God particle, and this and that, and how everything's held together by an unknown power and blah, blah. I just smile. I go, scripture says in him we move and live and have our being. It's no surprise or secret. It's God.
Yeah,
he might use a special particle that you haven't discovered yet, but that's him.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just saying, it all goes to prove to me that God is active in the lives of mankind, the life of mankind. He is active. Everything in creation, whether it be an interdimensional being, whether it be which dimensions actually to me prove the spiritual world. We just call it a different name in the scientific community versus the theological. We say it's spiritual. They say it's dimensional. There is no difference. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
These sons of God that interbred and were up and, came down from heaven in Genesis 6. The divine counsel in Psalm 81, they had DNA. How could they reproduce if they didn't have DNA? And it wasn't like in Genesis 6, they just went, we'll go ahead and genetically modify our specimens. No, they had sex with human women and produced an offspring, which from a purely scientific perspective, you have to have close enough DNA to reproduce.
Yep.
A dog and cat can't reproduce naturally.
Yeah.
But they could. So there's things that most theologians either don't see, don't want to see, or it contradicts what their favorite teacher taught them. Instead of just taking a step back, looking at the broad panorama and going, oh, that fits with that, that fits with that, that fits with that. That's how I've come to this particular lens. I sit back and I observe, I listen, and I watch. And everything, and I'm I have a master's in family therapy and psychology. And so I know also how psychological manipulation works. I know about psyops, psychological operations. I know how you get people to do what they want to do. It's truly the proverbial frog that you're slowly turning up the heat. People get used to it and go, well, it won't be. It's at least it's not as bad as it could be. And then the next bad thing happens. And then they warm them up to that to make that the new normal.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, and before they know it, the frog's toast, man.
Yeah.
The frog's boiled and it's time for frog legs.
It is a slow and steady process of desensitization.
Sure.
Literally. It never really dawned on me, because like I grew up watching horror movies, and I mean like ultra gore horror movies, Padre. Like I wanted to be a special effects guy. So for me, like if we had a couple of head loppings and a full body burn and stuff, it's a quality movie.
Sure.
And it never really dawned on me till I was, and I dealt with death in my family. I'd seen bodies. I'd been to funerals, you know.
Sure.
But it never dawned on me how desensitized I was until the day I was driving down the road. And there was literally a body in a bag on the side of the road. And my day just kind of went on.
Sure.
You know, and I was like, wow, wow. The utter desensitization to the violence, you know, it doesn't take long. It doesn't take long, but it also doesn't take long for that to root itself in, like you said, in the world of trauma, in the world of PTSD as well.
Absolutely.
So, before we let you go here in just a couple minutes, let's talk about, what's the way out? What's the way out? We were talking about the concept of prophecy and the idea that there's always a way out with prophecy. How do people start digging at an angle, I guess?
Well, you know, as a bishop, I've got to, you know, just lay the truth out there. What's coming is coming. You know, we have no control over it.
Yeah.
Literally, we're in the passenger seat of a crazy boat. And the only way out is to turn to Christ. That is the way out. You know, Christ said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, we can either accept that at face value, or we can call Christ a liar and say, no, you're just a way, a truth, a life, not the, just a. And at the end of the day, the events are going to play out. You know, it, as far as the events for the end of the age, because that's preceding Christ's return. Christ, when he first came as a suffering Messiah. He was the Lamb of God slain from the foundation of the earth. When he comes again, and he is, he's coming as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And anyone who has not submitted will perish, because we've now had 2,000 years to get our acts together and to do better. Yet each generation appears to get more wicked, especially in the United States. I mean, every type of debauchery is okay now. It's been a desensitization to sex, violence, and nudity.
Oh, absolutely.
And now everyone's groovy with it. You know, hey, more sex, more violence, more nudity. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You're literally dealing with, and I did my fair share of youth work. I did my fair share of, you know, ministry, things like that. But you are literally dealing with teenage sex addicts now.
Sure.
Things like that, absolutely. Because of the ready access to pornography. It's not like it was when, and you know, you've got a few years on me, not a whole lot. I'm in my later 40s. And back in my day, like that was on the back shelf. Like you had to specifically ask the dude to grab it for you. You know, no longer the case. That is like available on mom or dad's phone.
Yeah.
You know,
one click of the button online. And I mean, you could
one look up of the wrong term.
Yep.
And you could be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That my mom my wife was just telling me about somebody in her mom's group the other day. They all got together as a bunch of moms and They were like, you know, oh, the son got a hold of my phone and looked this up. And they're like, oh, my God. And she was like, well, I didn't think it was anything major. And they were like, I think you need to look that up.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, my God. You know, because it is a different day and age. And we do have that. Even back in the day to learn about esoteric topics, to find something like Kabbalah or things like that. Was a searching and scouring of your local library or bookstore.
Oh, yeah. You were lucky if you found anything on it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is all readily available now. Even mass interpretations of the Bible, all readily available. Cool. Like all the footnotes that you see, it's not hard to get them now.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So,
people come up with some really crazy stuff with the scriptures.
Well, and like you said, that return to Christ, whether that is learning to be right in your heart, you know, learning to be that Christ to everybody, or whether it is a true return to church for you. I think the point is we all need to kind of straighten up and fly right. We've all been slacking a little bit.
Yeah. And it comes down to, you know, God is infinitely loving.
Oh, absolutely.
But he's also infinitely just.
Yeah.
And infinitely righteous and infinitely holy.
Yeah.
And I think that message has been lost on these generations currently. Mm-hmm. They see Jesus just as this hippie in the sky that says, hey, as long as you're happy, I'm happy, man. And that's not God.
Well, and they forget the fact that there's a couple other aspects to God. There's the Father. He's still got quite a bit of wrath in there, old Padre. You know,
yeah.
He never really dropped the wrath thing. Let's just say mm-hmm. that.
No,
Dad never really mm-hmm. let that one go.
No, but you know what? Because Christ is in unison with the Father, and you know they're
absolutely
co-eternal, you know, their substance is the same, and there was a reason why Christ was known as the Man of Sorrows, and why he's spoken of as the Man of Sorrows. Most times, when you look at the writings of the Ante-Nicene Fathers, the disciples of the disciples,
yeah,
and the apostles, you read that much of Christ's time when he was here on earth was in sorrow because he wanted so bad to reach humanity. And yet at every turn, they either denied him or outright opposed him. And by doing so, they're denying or opposing the very creator of the fabric of space, time, anything else you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, the great architect of the universe, or the divine intellect, or, you know, the nebulous God thing.
Yeah.
He's also a God of order.
Yeah.
And what do you see in the world today? Chaos and disorder. Disorder in the families, disorder in the judicial system, disorder and chaos in our personalities, the way we treat each other, and everything else. There's only one father of that, and that's Lucifer. You know, he was, as Christ himself said, he's the father of all lies. He was a liar from the beginning. And so it really comes down to, one, there is no middle ground. You're either on God's side or you're on Lucifer's side. And that doesn't mean you're actively, you know, painting bloody pentagrams everywhere and, you know, black candles and you're summoning demons. And
or even going to church every Sunday and Bible study on Wednesday.
Absolutely. And you can still be serving the devil. And it really boils down to one thing that I have really taken as my own motto is it, thy will be done. Hmm. Like Christ in the garden. Unfortunately, most of humanity says, my will be done.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it my way, what I think is best. And so the only other person at the very beginning that did that was Lucifer.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, following Lucifer's path also gets Lucifer's reward.
And, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow, Father. The thy will be done, the fiat. You know, and I used to teach a whole class on the best four-letter word ever, fiat. It's the only good four-letter word. Let thy will be done, you know? And, yeah, we go through pain. We go through torment. Most of the time, we have put ourselves in that situation. We have put ourselves in the path of that bullet 90% of the time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, when it comes to... Especially men of the cloth. I know quite a few who, a lot of people that leave the seminary and leave that path end up down a really bad path eventually.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And I think it really is that tortured soul syndrome where there is this burden of knowledge.
Yeah.
And you are literally just like, throwing bricks at balloons, trying to get people's attention in the real world that, hey, wake up. This is not how it is. And it's hard because you can be literally building the wall while you're throwing the bricks and beating your head against it at the same time. And it can be hard to live with that knowledge and live with that burden. And yet still be loving and caring to your fellow man who is stepping in every pile of everything everywhere he walks and tracking it with him.
Well, and you know, something I had to come to grips with when I was younger as a minister, I always felt like I was getting frustrated and stressful that people weren't listening, you know, and they weren't coming to the knowledge of Christ. And finally, I don't know if it was the Holy Spirit or I just sat my own butt down. Most likely it was him because I doubt I would have thought of this. He reminded me of the scripture. No one can come unto the Father except the Father draw him. Mm. And so I sat with that and I heard this voice. You don't save anyone. I do. And if all you are required to do is tell them.
Yep.
And if they accept, wonderful. If they don't, you've done your job.
Yeah.
Dust shake your feet and get the dust off and don't let it bug you because they're not rejecting me as a minister. They're rejecting the words of the Father.
Yeah. Yeah. They're rejecting that capital T truth that they're being exposed to, which is sadly, you know, ignorance, folks, is literally having been exposed to something and choosing just nah.
Yeah.
That's ignorance, you know, and that is the root of so many things that are near and dear to people's hearts, Father. And it's so interesting that we are having this discussion, in the middle of Lent.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really important. I said it a couple weeks ago whenever Mardi Gras happened. I was involved with my church, things like that, I was never a give something up. I was a take something on.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do that I'm going to try to do every day? And not just like for the next 40 days, but for all eternity. Like this, this is a 40-day chance for me to put a different branch on my tree of life through an experience. And that goes beyond any church. That goes beyond the walls of faith, I think, to want to challenge yourself to be a better human being.
Well, sure. You know, as a therapist, I used to tell people and still tell people that there's only two phases in life, progression and stagnation. If you aren't moving forward to something, you don't have a vision, a goal, you're going to stagnate. You'll start going down this toilet bowl of, you know, depression, stress, irritability, because you feel unfulfilled. You're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where you think you should be.
Well, and granted, that's not to, and I posted this on a buddy's timeline the other day and was literally like, if you need to talk, feel free to reach out.
Yeah.
Because he was saying the whole thing about, you know, if you busy yourself enough, you don't have time to be depressed. And it's like, oh, enjoy that boomerang ride when it comes home to roost. Yes. Idle hands are definitely the devil's playground, but that's a careful statement to make. You can't just busy yourself for the sake of like forgetting or not thinking about something. The problem does not go away.
No, because that's how burnout happens.
Yeah.
Burnout is just as deadly as depression.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and you gotta be careful for that. You gotta be careful with who you give your energy to, how you give your energy away, and, you know, make sure that your cup is at least close to the brim, folks, so that you got a little bit to give to people.
Absolutely.
If your cup ain't full yourself, it's hard to fill other people's cups. And it took me years to get away from my addiction. And it was mainly because of what we talked about just a minute ago. People not listening and me having this, what I believe to be this burden upon me, which was totally misplaced and utterly misplaced, and utterly there as a point of ego for me to trip on to lead me down that road.
Sure. You know, we all take on things we probably shouldn't. Yeah. Sometimes we knew we shouldn't, and other times we think we're doing a good thing, and then it turns around and bites us in the butt. And the truth is, sometimes life sucks.
Yeah.
But God doesn't. That's the good thing. And given time and prayer and reflection, I mean, you'll pull out of it.
Yeah.
But while you're going through it, it sucks. I'll just be plain on that.
And you know, that's just it. This too shall pass. It may pass like a kidney stone, but it'll pass.
It will pass one way or the other.
You know, and that's just it. I had a really good therapist years ago, Joe. Great guy. I hope you're out there doing great things, Joe. He was going the clinical route, and he tried to explain my anxiety to me as a train. And he's like, you going around your day regularly, I'm sure you run across a train track or two. What are you going to do if a train pops up? Sure, it's frustrating, but you sit and you wait, and eventually the train passes, right? You don't try to go through the train. You don't like, you gotta stop yourself from that want to sometimes plow through the situation and sometimes literally surrender is the answer.
Yeah.
It's very counterintuitive to think that way, but surrender is one of the most empowering things in the world. The idea of not my monkey, not my tree.
That's right.
You know, why would you get yourself involved with it? Like, sure, you could wear a red cape for a minute, but you're also now accountable for all that.
Absolutely.
And is that something that you have to take on?
Absolutely. You can't white knight yourself through life and expect everything to be roses and garlands and whatever else. I mean, life happens, the good, the bad, the ugly, and otherwise. But if you have something that sustains you through it all, which, you know, for me as a bishop, it's Christ. My faith in God pulls me through anything and everything, and has pulled me through anything and everything.
Yeah.
And I tell you, you'd never regret aligning yourself with God ever. Yeah.
And
I mean, you might when you're mad at him, and he understands that, and you cuss at him and stomp your feet with a 2-year-old.
Well, you know, like it. Me and God had a. It'd been a long time since me and God had a knockdown drag out like that. and believe me, I used to have nights where I like drove out and away so I could go yell at God, like openly, you know. In that truth therapy, like just scream into the void way. But
yeah,
when things happened with my brother, it was one of those like, why?
Yeah.
What the hell has this man done? He has done nothing but take care of his family, do right by an ex that did him totally wrong. He owns a retreat company and has brought, I don't know how many thousands of children to you. But that doesn't make him immune. That doesn't stop like the chain of life from happening.
Even
at 47, I had to have that stealing moment between me and my God of me literally getting pissed at my God and screaming at him and yelling.
And isn't it a wonderful thing that he doesn't have such a fragile ego that he strikes you down with lightning?
Oh, yeah. Because I've been a piece of crap. I've been a piece of crap friend to him over the years, all kinds of things.
Yeah, but he's always been there.
Yep.
He's the friend and the love that does not leave you.
Absolutely.
Everyone and everything else leaves you.
Yep.
He doesn't.
Yeah, and my relation, I tell this to people all the time, Father, my relationship with my God is daily. I talk to my God every day. Do I step into a church to do that? No, I really don't anymore.
Honestly, if I wasn't a bishop, most of the churches are crap these days. Yeah. I'll be blunt and plain and honest.
Yeah.
Most of the churches are crap. They don't know what they believe or why they believe it. And so they walk around spitting out dogma that really has no basis in the historical Christianity.
Or in the big red words.
Or in biblical history Christianity. It's all self-help, pop psych, hey, let's slap each other on the butt, have a good time, and call it church.
Yeah.
That's not church. That's entertainment.
Yeah. Well, it does right well on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. It works well.
I know. I saw a certain Houston preacher every Sunday when I lived in Maine.
Yeah,
I lived in Maine and caught that broadcast every Sunday.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah, and I watched it because it was like, hey, there's my hometown guy, you know. And there's just, hey, as a producer, I've done that kind of production for churches and for mega churches, and there's there's a different level of production that's going on there. It's super fun, but.
Yeah.
Is it the word? Is it the word in action necessarily all the time? No.
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 And I would venture to say it's not word in action 99% of the time.
Yeah.
It's a feel good country club. People go to eat food, check out each other is wearing.
Are we going to go and do the bowling alley on the left part of the campus after church?
Yes. And we'll have our. Tea and crumpets in the foyer this evening. And
we'll have a short little like cappuccino Bible study with pastor's wife.
And we'll have a puppet Bible study packed out a scene from the Bible.
Hey, I think you and I think we got something going on here. Actually, hold on.
I mean, I'm there with you. You know, the modern church reeks, and I can't imagine. What God thinks of it. I can't imagine.
I'd love to say he's rolling in his grave, but that's just tasteless. but before we let you go, Father, let everybody know where they can go to purchase your book, Walking with Ghosts. Of course, it's available on the Curious Realm store, but how they can get a hold of you if they are someone under oppression spiritually, if they are somebody who might need a religious ritual cleansing of their property, their home, themselves, a family member. Tell everybody where they can go for all that.
Yeah. You know, for me, myself, I'm in South Dakota now, and I don't travel too far. But we do have a network of exorcists that can meet people and help them and whatnot. I will say, honestly, if there's a Christian with enough faith, anyone can be an exorcist if they have the faith. But that's the thing, you know, that you have to have that faith. Otherwise, you'll be torn up. And that's what makes an exorcist versus just your average minister or just your average priest. Because I've known priests that run out of haunted houses.
Oh, absolutely.
But as far as getting a hold of me, they can contact my group on Facebook, Paranormal Researchers, Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael, or PRISM. They can contact that. They could send me a private message on Facebook, too. I'm on there. That's fine. I don't mind that. I might not be able to find someone in their area to help them, but I'll absolutely be looking around or advising them to find a local church that actually believes in exorcism.
Yeah.
Because very few do. Most pastors and priests will just brush you off.
Yeah.
But I'm there to at least advise and to get them on the right track, if nothing else.
Exactly.
But as far as my book, it's on Amazon. You can find it there. And like you said, it's Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. It talks about my generational issues with my family, with ghosts, demons, UFOs, aliens, that kind of stuff. I even wrote a little bit about my experience as a kid. But there's been a lot happened since then that I haven't wrote about. And, you know, missing time, that kind of fun stuff, weird marks.
Yeah.
But I just take it with a grain of salt. That crap is, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You bore me. Just like the demon. They bore me.
Well, we should actually do a whole episode on the idea of generational oppression.
Absolutely.
And the fact that, like, it is kind of a sin of the fathers situation and almost that old European tradition of the sin eater.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody who comes and absorbs that generational sin from you before you pass on so that you are clear for holy rites and things like that. Just it's a really interesting study in Catholicism and Christianity, I think.
Absolutely. And so, from a psychological perspective, a lot of it's learned behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that creates its own self-perpetuating curse because the behaviors never change.
Yeah. Yeah. And even going down to the fact of, you know, like epigenetic.
Absolutely.
Epigenetic things like addiction, stuff like that, where it comes down to because your last three people in your family were hardcore alcoholics, you now have a predisposition to alcohol.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you know, they've proven to some degree that genes carry memory.
Mm.
And so literally
absolutely,
it's the sense of bodies in your
ooh,
makeup.
Ooh, ooh, wow. Wow. We definitely got to do that episode soon.
Absolutely. I've studied all that too.
Thank you. Thank you as always for coming on, for sharing your wealth and breadth of knowledge when it comes to the scripture, to scriptural interpretation, your open heart, your open mind to conversation as a man of the cloth and a man of the collar. All too often, not the case. So I want to thank you for that always. You've always come on this show with the most open heart and most open of mind for the conversation that we have. So thank you.
Well, you know, I just am what I am. And it's like Popeye. I am what I am, that's all.
I was just about to say, way to be Popeye. Well,
but you're welcome.
As always, thank you so much again, Archbishop James Cloud. Until next time, we're going to go ahead and let you go and run off to commercial and hit up our next guest. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
You're very welcome. Have a good one.
Blessings, Father. Have a very blessed and fruitful Lent.
Yes, you too.
Wow. Always a great conversation with James Cloud. I always leave uplifted from his message. He is one of the only men of color that I know, and I know more than a few handfuls, but one of the only men of color that I know that is open to such discussions like what we had here tonight. So great to see that. Speaking of other discussions that we're going to have tonight, we're about to hop off to commercial break. Enjoy our new video loops, all that kind of good stuff, folks. And when we come back, we will be talking with generational abductee, niece of Betty and Barney Hill, and MUFON experiencer lead, Kathleen Martin, when we get back from this commercial break, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for everything, as always, to our sponsors. Thank you so much to WebWorks Wireless. You guys have been fantastic. WebWorks Wireless is an up-and-coming company. They provide wireless packages for people that have camps, people that are a little bit more off-grid, people that are not on a major backbone of internet. They actively provide our live streams to our website every week. They are also our live stream sponsor for all of our live streams on location for great and amazing things like the 52nd annual MUFON conference coming up. I cannot wait for that. We are a proud sponsor of that. We are a proud sponsor of the upcoming Folk Monster Festival, as well as the, let's see, Southeast Texas Bigfoot Conference, the Texas Bigfoot Film Festival, the Texas Bigfoot Conference, all kinds of things, so many more coming. Our guest in this second part is Kathleen Martin. She is the author of so many books. The two that I have here in my library are Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You Have Been Abducted, as well as her new book, Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Kathleen has been involved with MUFON for numerous years. She is a field investigator. She's a good friend of our friend and guest, Seb Talk. Welcome to the show. Kathleen, how are you today?
Thank you. It's great to be with you. I'm doing terrific.
Man, I am so excited to have you on the show. Like I told you in the pre-interview, I have been into your work for years. I love your writing, and the topic of abduction, I think, it's almost one of the dirty secrets of ufology, sadly. You know, you hear so many things about crop circles, everything else, but when you get to the point of abduction, you lose a lot of people, and it's kind of sad, because that is one of the things that that is a close encounter of the fourth kind, is abduction, folks. So let's get into real quick, Kathleen, before we get into your realm of work, what you do for MUFON, all of that. How did you come into the world of ufology? How did you get involved with this?
Well, I was 13 years old and returning home from school for the day when I walked in and found my mother on the telephone having a very unusual conversation with my aunt Betty Hill. It was September 20th, 1961, and she and my uncle had been on a short vacation to Niagara Falls, to Montreal, and then during the night when they were returning home to their home on the seacoast of New Hampshire, they had a close encounter with a UFO. They called it flying saucers in those days, and it had come so close to them. In fact, it had hovered silently only a couple of hundred feet above their vehicle. My uncle, who was a confirmed skeptic, got out of the car and insisted that he was going to identify it. He had binoculars. He, when he stepped away from the car, it moved to an adjacent field. It was still hovering now about 100 feet overhead, and it was starting to descend in his direction. There were so many mysteries in that case, and I watched the unfolding of these events, of my aunt and uncle's response to them. They made a Project Blue Book report to the Air Force. They made another report to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. I knew many of the people who ended up investigating this case early on because we were a close family. In fact, only 2 days after this conversation that Betty had with my mother, my family and I went to Betty's and Barney's home about 20 miles from my childhood home, and I heard the story myself from my aunt. I held the watches that had stopped operating. Oh, wow. I saw the spots on the trunk of the vehicle that caused a compass to spin, indicating a magnetic field in that area. Those spots had not been there before this incident, and there they were, shiny, all about the same size, about the size of half dollars, if you remember what those look like.
Just old enough.
And, so many mysteries. Betty's dress was torn in several places. There was a pink powdery substance that eventually grew on that dress. It's undergone scientific testing in several laboratories. Later on, because Barney had been hospitalized for a bleeding ulcer related to this experience that they had, and his conscious recall of observing these non-human entities and being fearful that he was going to be captured, he was hospitalized. This was life-threatening. He was referred to Dr. Benjamin Simon, a famous neuropsychiatrist who taught at Harvard, who had owned his own private sanitarium, who, when he was younger, and who had been a colonel in the Army during World War II, and had set up the psychiatric hospital on Long Island, New York. It was a Mason General Hospital, and he successfully treated veterans returning home from the war with what they called shell shock and conversion hysteria in those days. Yeah. And, you know, this is exactly what Barney was suffering from. It was a different cause, but certainly that level of fear.
Yeah.
And the subconscious memories of having been taken, having been captured, taken to craft and examined by non-humans, not knowing if he'd ever be released, even though they were reassuring he and Betty that they only needed to do a few simple tests and then they'd be on their way. So that was my introduction. It really sparked my curiosity, but I went on to a professional career after college and worked until about 1988 to 1990 when I was stricken with a debilitating disease. And I had to leave my profession. I was incapacitated, unable to walk unassisted. And finally, I started to become a little bit better, but my condition waxed and waned. I was seeking intellectual stimulation. I had a dream of being a writer. I had originally begun to study that when I was in college. I talked to my aunt Betty about it, and she said, "Oh, Kathy, don't do something like that. You'll never make a living as a writer. become a social worker like me."
there you go. Tons of money in social work.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. But think of all the benefits that you get, the health insurance and the paid vacations, that sort of thing. Well, I was left without a career because I wasn't well enough to work. Yeah. And I thought, you know, something I could do for intellectual stimulation is investigate my aunt and uncle's case. I could do the research, the investigation, familiarize myself with all of the files, interview Betty, drive to the along this route when I'm if I'm well enough or somebody else can drive us.
Yeah.
And that's what I did over a period of many years because of that health condition that I had. I no longer have that. So I've been free of illness since 2012.
That is great.
Yes. So I'm extraordinarily grateful for the healing.
Absolutely.
And I have written about that in Forbidden Knowledge. That's just one of many things that I wrote about.
Well, and that is one of many notes that I have sitting right here on my upboard in front of me is the healing that comes along. And you actually quote that. But before we get into that, there was a part right here in your chapter Discovery that I wanted to get into that you mentioned about your uncle, Barney, that I have mentioned so many times with our good friend and guest, Terry Lovelace.
Yes.
And that is the fear. The fear that comes along with these things, the literal stymieing fear where you don't know what to do or how to react. Despite the fact of, you know, Terry at the time being not only a trained military person, but a trained EMT, somebody who was trained to react in emergency situation, even he was stymied by his experience. And there is a part that you, I'm going to quote it right here, an incredible 78% sure. reported that they are becoming increasingly psychic, and 50% can facilitate healing in others. Telepathic communication with ETs is possible in 88% of experiencers, sometimes on craft and sometimes in their own home. The troubling fear response by experiencers in our study alerts me to a serious need in the UFO abduction contact community. And I think that that fear plays a big part in a lot of things, not only in wanting to come forward, tell your story to understand, like Michael Carter has said so many times on our show, the fact of not knowing who else to share this experience with. And, you know, especially back before the days of the internet, before chat rooms, things like that, like how did you even find that support? You know,
Yes, and it was nearly impossible to find support.
Yeah.
Back in those early days, you were aware of certain researchers such as Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, and then later John Mack, Dr. James Harder, but there were not that many people who were public even investigating these phenomena.
Yeah.
So it was extraordinarily difficult, and people lived in terror. They held it inside because they couldn't risk speaking with someone because they would be laughed at. They'd be asked what they had been smoking or drinking, or oftentimes they'd be told that they were insane and they needed to see a psychiatrist or that they were possessed by the devil and needed to get onto their knees and pray. You know, there's a little bit of that still occurring today, but you know, I've taken many steps toward assisting experiencers toward understanding. When I was asked by the Mutual UFO Network to head up their experiencer research team, there were only three of us on the team. I didn't know exactly how I would proceed, but I began with Denise Stoner and a team of other specialists by developing protocols for the investigation of an abduction. MUFON didn't have those protocols in place at that time. We did that first, and then I started to talk with experiencers who were just getting in touch with me, who wanted to have the opportunity to speak with someone without ridicule, someone who would respect them, who would be empathetic toward what they had to say, and would not pass judgment on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this team, I was very quickly ready to quit because I had no time left in the day. There was so much demand. And so we ended up with 50 over a period of 10 years, 50
wow.
People who are trained listeners, who are kind, compassionate people. And also we had, by the time I left this position, we had, I believe it was 5 to 7 PhD psychotherapists, MD psychiatrists
Incredible.
On that team who worked as consultants to the team and met with us. We all met once a month. We still do. I'm a consultant to the team now, sort of an advisor. Yeah. I've stepped down because I'm involved in other things. I don't have time for everything in my life. So so that's a little background about what I've done in addition to writing 6 books.
Well, and of course, you know, working with the likes of Stanton Friedman for many years in the field, working with experiencers. And I think one of the things that, of course, like you said, people are afraid to come forward because of ridicule, things like that. Even in Terry Lovelace's case, it's the fact of he was a sitting lawyer. You know, imagine how many cases would have been asked for reevaluation. You know,
absolutely.
Things like that. So, and when you talk about especially people like the fire in the sky incident, things like that, it's not necessarily the best thing in the world to come forward for your life. You know,
it's just the like, opposite.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
it's ever made public.
Yeah, like my poor Mike Weston is in a sad state. Because of things, and people don't understand the fact that like, yeah, you will lose jobs, all kinds of stuff. Whenever you come out with this, there's a reason why Aaron Montgomery's book is called Dirty Little Secret, you know, because it's not easy even to come out to family with it.
Absolutely.
What has your experience been with this, Kathleen? Because of course, part of what you get into in Forbidden Knowledge is once again that healing concept. Let's get into that real quick. And like you said, there was the contingent that had healing abilities. There are about 80% of experiencers are now experiencing psychic abilities, things like that.
Yes. Well, that is very interesting to me because I've wondered what has caused this. And thankfully, we've had the Omega 1, 2, and 3 studies. The fourth study is taking place as we speak. And the first two were done by 2 professors at the University of Connecticut, Kenneth Ring and Christopher Rosen. And they did a comparative study of near-death experiencers and experiencers of ET contact determine if they had anything in common or if they were different. And what they found is that experiencers of contact had all of the characteristics that near-death experiencers share. And in addition to that, there's an indication that there is more trauma in their lives because this experience, when you don't understand it, can be incredibly traumatic. So,
absolutely. I have only experienced sleep paralysis episodes. things like that. I actively have anxiety attacks in my sleep. I don't know how that's possible when you're literally the most relaxed you can be. But those are terrifying enough, even knowing what they are. So I can't even imagine the PTSD, which is what we now know as shell shock, things like that, you know, what your uncle was diagnosed with.
Yes.
And yeah, it's not a pleasant experience for most, whereas most people, most books I've read, most people I've interviewed who have had the near-death experience, it is a transformative and a steeling point in their life where they realize that they have a chance to do something different. They have a chance to change. It's not really something where they leave with a whole lot of like, whoa, what was that experience? And questioning their existence or what's happening, you know? Most of the time they leave with a mission. Not so with abduction.
That's true. And, you know, it makes me wonder what brings about this near-death experience kind of change in experiencers of contact. I wonder if when they are taken to craft through solid surfaces such as windows or walls or ceilings, does this induce a near-death type experience in them? Because they, let me say first that I've spoken to three brilliant physicists about this, but two of them at a more lengthy level. But all of them said to me, well, remember, 99.9% of the atom is empty space.
That's right.
And theoretically, everything has a vibrational frequency. Nothing is completely solid.
That's right.
And if you can align frequency and phase, then atoms can interpenetrate. So all you have to do is adjust that frequency and that phase, and you can pass bodies through solid surfaces because they're no longer solid. You know, what we think of as solid, we've already done it in a laboratory using neutrinos. We're just technologically not there, but someday we will be.
Yeah.
So then you have to ask, are these ETs, as we call them, using this kind of technology, or are they simply interdimensional, and do they have interdimensional portals that carry humans to their space? And maybe both is happening, because I have many reports of both of those things occurring with experiencers of contact. So I find it incredibly interesting because
Please.
Because experiencers of contact and experiencers, near-death experiencers, look at the world differently. They view themselves differently after. They develop, some of them become mediums. I know many experiencers of contact who are mediums. They have electromagnetic anomalies in their homes. They have light orbs that seem to have intelligence coming into their homes, that sort of thing. So it seems that they move in a certain direction beyond the solid three-dimensional humans that we think of living on this planet.
Wow. And, you know, just to throw out a theory and a concept here, there's a scientist with a unit called the God Helmet, who was actively experimenting with near-death experience type experiences. And of course, this is all done through magnetic field, things like that, magnetic resonance through the skull. And there have been numerous instances of people in MRIs having the same sort of experience, the bright light, things like that. It would be very interesting. Of course, the technology that any ET civilization would be using would be highly magnetic, in that RF field. for levitation, things like that. So to know, like you said, the scientists said, all you have to do is match that frequency and vibration. Much like you take any piece of metal and stick it to a magnet and later on you can pull it off and it's a magnet.
Yes.
Because the electrons are now aligned the same way. No different than the experiencer in this case, it seems like, where almost they have shifted into that vibration and are now, like you said, able to see and experience that on a more regular basis.
Yes, absolutely. It does change an individual at the deepest core of their existence. And they develop these wonderful capabilities of being telepathic of in the presence of extraterrestrials, sometimes with one another, of developing the psychic or intuitive ability of becoming empaths, where they can sense or feel illness in another person's body as if it is their own. Sense the emotion as if they are experiencing it themselves. So that's another psychic sense that experiencers develop. There are many changes, and it is profound. And experiencers, I know, need a place where they can go to feel comfortable. Yeah. And many have gathered on social media groups for experiencers where they can speak with others, where they can gain support for themselves. My book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted, is a comprehensive guide for experiencers of contact on the different types of contact, what to do when you've had this contact, the stages that you go through from denial to finally acceptance, the different characteristics we share.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because so many, the phenomenology that somebody goes through, the arc that somebody goes through after their experiences, almost sadly, like victims of abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, the attachment and even sometimes the utter wanting to deny the fact that it happened to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Barney did that. Mm. You know, when he arrived home, he said to Betty, "Don't ever tell anyone this.
Oh, wow.
No good can come of it." And, well, she called my mother and told her. And then when Betty and Barney went out to the spots on the trunk of the car with the compass, Barney said, we'd better forget about this as fast as we can.
Wow.
That was his reaction to it. It's normal to attempt to forget about it, to deny that it happened. Most people who have talked to me, and I've talked to probably a couple of thousand at this point, have said in the beginning, I know that this is going to sound crazy to you. And I have to reply, no, it's not going to. I have a background in the mental health field. That's what I studied in college. And I have an incredible amount of knowledge about contact at this point. And none of it sounds crazy to me. I know the difference between mental illness and a real experience.
Well, and let's get into that real quick, because I think that is hugely important to understand. These are not things that, and granted, that's not to say that there are not people who do not experience similar things, who do have mental health issues. Absolutely. Mm. But there is a great number of cases out there that are fully unexplainable as to how they happened, but fully real in the case that they did happen. And let's get into that real quick.
Well, yes, they are incredibly real. People who have had these contact experiences generally remember a little bit of it. They have conscious recall. The psychologists who have come forward and said that it's all sleep paralysis are incorrect. One of the questions that we asked on the study that MUFON did was, do you have a history of waking up unable to move your body? You can move only your eyes, and you have shadowy figures overhead. Well, yes, as about 93%, I believe it was, I don't have the figures right in front of me, said yes. Well, those are the symptoms of sleep paralysis, and some people do have sleep paralysis. In sleep paralysis, it's, you know, just that your body's a little bit out of sync. You are not completely awake yet. You're coming out of REM sleep, and in REM sleep, you are paralyzed, able to move only your eyes. They generally are moving back and forth in REM sleep. So then we asked, have you been wide awake? Have you had non-humans come into your environment? Have you been able to move your body, but you suddenly become paralyzed? And among the general experiencer group all overall, it was less than 50%. But among those in what we had identified as the UFO abduction syndrome group, which had all of the characteristics as determined by what was called the American Personality Inventory, doctored by Dr. Don C. Dondary and graded, he was the psychology PhD psychology professor who helped to standardize this instrument. And what we discovered is that those people have a very high rate, more than 50%, 60% or more of being wide awake, of having these non-entities come into their environment, of observing them, and it also their family members. So we've been able to establish an intergenerational link among family members.
Yeah. And that was exactly my next point on my upboard in front of me, was the intergenerational link, especially with hybridization, things like that. Now, with that intergenerational link in mind, are you yourself an experiencer, Kathleen?
I am. And I thought that I would never state that. I intended to take it to my grave, but certain things have changed in my life, and I felt that it was necessary to come forward at this time, rather than to leave this information on, you know, for people to find after I passed on.
Yeah.
So that's what I am doing. Of course, there's that factor of ridicule, and I don't care about that ridicule. What I believe is the people who ridicule you have their own set of beliefs that this is not real, or that this is all demonic, which it is not. There's a scientific program going on here. Demons don't do science. And
that needs to be a t-shirt that is available on your website.
That's a great idea.
You need that. Yeah. If that's not your catchphrase, I don't know what is.
Yes.
That's great.
You know, and so I won't even respond to those individuals. Mm. I've had people who wanted to debate me. I'm not going to debate anyone.
Yeah.
I certainly am not going to debate religion. Well, so You know,
it's one of those, how can you even debate belief?
Right.
It's a belief. You believe it because you believe it. Like,
yes.
And we have this conversation with so many people on the show, Kathleen, about the fact of the reality that you have is what comes to you through the filter that you have seen the world through. You know, whether it's your experiential filter, the filter of the religion that you were raised in, what have you. I was raised Roman Catholic. I spent the first year in college studying to be a Catholic priest. I taught religion and CCE for a decade, things like that. That doesn't mean that in the background I wasn't reading Kabbalah in my spare time, mm-hmm. the Upanishads, you know, reading world religion, reading other texts, reading about the things like Betty and Barney Hill and stuff like that, and having an open mind. Unfortunately, most people didn't and don't.
Yes, absolutely. But I chalk that up to ignorance.
Yes.
And yes. Most people who take the time to actually engage in the study of these phenomena end up saying, well, I've seen the evidence that it's real.
Yeah.
It's those who don't seek the evidence, who prejudge, who are having the great difficulty, and who are coming, you know, forward with scathing
yeah.
rebukes of people who do have these experiences.
Well, it was shortly after my first experience with a shadow person at the foot mm-hmm. of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And a moment of sleep paralysis. And I remember at the time telling this was the beginning of my departure from the church spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling at the time my spiritual director about this experience and asking him, you know, what the church teaching on it was. Was there a church teaching about the paranormal, you know, ghosts, what have you? And he's like, well, not really, Chris. You know, it's... Yeah, we don't really have a teaching on, you know, stay away, don't talk to the dead, things like that. But we don't have a teaching on that. And I'm like, that's funny, because you literally ask me to believe in something due to spectral evidence. Like you as a point of faith. So, but yet still you're telling me that my experience isn't real, that what I felt, what I experienced, wasn't real and will not be acknowledged. And I that's too much of a leap of logic for me to bridge. I couldn't, like, I was literally genuinely coming to you for a question. For an answer to a question, you literally were like, we don't even acknowledge the question.
Right. Yes.
It's like, does that mean the question doesn't exist, guy?
Yes.
You're literally telling me that evil is stalking my soul around every corner.
Right. You know, there is good and evil in this world.
Absolutely.
I'm convinced of that.
Absolutely.
And we have to, as individuals, program ourselves and our lives in order to deal with these negatives and positives, and try to bring as much positive as possible into this world and eliminate the negative that is attracted to many people who have behaviors and that cause these negatives to be attracted to them.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, it's a sort of a sad story. I have a friend whose mother passed away, and because of her religious indoctrination, when her mother came to her to speak to her after her death, my friend rebuked her as the devil.
Wow.
Which... it's such a sad circumstance, because so many people have yeah. told me that their loved ones have come back and left some kind of a sign for yeah. them, either the scent, speaking to them directly, mm-hmm. something that they valued greatly just shows up, drops out of the sky, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's so sad that someone's mother comes lovingly in and that individual rebukes that person as evil.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to rebuke somebody's experience of abduction as evil.
Yes.
That's no different than, pardon the expression and the equation, both from the experiencer side and the abductee side, as well as those that have been sexually abused. But that is just like telling a rape victim that, nah, that didn't happen.
Precisely.
That's literally, a really good analogy. Could not be piling onto the PTSD more.
Absolutely.
By just denying it outright and saying, well, you know, I appreciate that you think this happened to you, but no, it really didn't. You are literally adding to the level of PTSD that that person is experiencing.
You absolutely are. And think of Travis Walton, for example. Here is a young 22-year-old man who is just taken from the woods where he was working on his way home after dark from work and goes missing for 5 days. Now, that was enough to cause trauma and fear in Travis. But add on that those who made it a point to attempt to destroy his life. Those
That's right.
who ridiculed him, and also Mike Rogers, who Yep. attempted to paint Mike Rogers as a criminal.
Yeah.
That is simply unforgivable from these disinformants who had an agenda to destroy people.
Absolutely.
Had credible cases of contact.
Well, like I said, Mike, I would love to do a whole episode sometime, and I'm getting ready to approach Mike Rogers about it, about the horrible rabbit hole that this can lead your life down.
Absolutely.
The number of people on social media, the number of trolls that go after him, it is horrifying to see. And hey, you know, between friends, those two guys, whatever happened. But that doesn't mean that you discount somebody's experience. That doesn't mean that you personally attack people like that. And like I said earlier, it is not always. It is pretty rare that people are like, well, you know, he had a movie made about him. Yeah. You know who's not living as a millionaire? Travis Walton.
That's true. Very true. No one.
Like, nobody's out there making millions off this stuff, man.
That's true. Like, nobody gets rich off this.
It is not in your vested interest to come forward and say that I was taken aboard a craft, that I had an experience in my backyard. None of it. Is to your best interest to come forward with. So anybody that does, like, I give more than a tip of a hat to. That is the biggest point of bravery in the world.
Yes, it is brave because the only thing that you can do by making this public is to help others who are having the same experience. It's certainly
That's
not
right.
going to enrich your life or improve your reputation, particularly for people like me who have a very good reputation as a scientific ufologist.
That's right.
Who for many, many years, you know, I began as a nuts and bolts investigator.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for physical evidence, and I found a lot of physical evidence. And then in 2011, I threw the research that I had done through my own personal experiences. I had to acknowledge the interdimensional part of all of this, the paranormal part, the overlay on this as well. To simply ignore it, as I had been doing, to me was like putting my feet in cement and not moving beyond the physical evidence. There is so much that is common among experiencers of contact that is not entirely physical. It opens a can of worms. It's more difficult to understand. It then brings in religious implications, but also spiritual. There is so much to study there. And so much to learn from. And I'm very pleased that government officials are now studying all of that and attempting to explain it scientifically, because this is explained through theoretical physics.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we were saying, the conversation that you had with the scientists talking about vibration, that is a point that we bring up on this show regularly. The fact that 90% of what we see, not even see, 90% of us is empty space. We are literally, by all means of physics right now, sharing an electron shell, Kathleen. Our electrons are co-mingling as we speak.
They are.
By all knowledge of physics, how far away electrons travel from their nucleus, you know? So, yeah, it's really interesting whenever you start getting into that realm. And like you said, to have that start really becoming a true path of investigation now, to start having theoretical physicists coming in on the game of investigation. It's different than going out with a Geiger counter in somebody's backyard. You know, it's a totally, totally different world of investigation, like you said, than what you started with. And what has that done for you now, like you said, to open your mind to that concept?
It has given me deeper insight into all of this, because consciousness plays a vital role in the understanding of contact. And it has interdimensional components. Some of these ETs say that they are live in the fifth and sixth dimensions. We can feel them. I can feel them. In my book, Forbidden Knowledge, I have written about an experiment that I participated in with other researchers and investigators, and we ended up learning how to connect with these unseen ETs. We can feel the strong tingling presence in our bodies. We learn to communicate with them telepathically. In this book, I have written 120 questions that we asked over a two-year period, and their answers to help us to understand all of this. And so that's what I've learned when I was able to finally open my mind, put my reputation as a nuts and bolts investigator aside, maintaining the same level of knowledge and even moving toward further knowledge in this field. Now, Jacques Vallée found this a long time ago. I met Jacques Vallée for the first time in 1967, when he visited my childhood home with a team of scientists to work with my aunt and uncle on a psychophysics experiment, which we think of today as a CE5 experiment.
Interesting. That was one of the many things on my board. Now, I'm a CE5 member. I've only done a couple of exercises, things like that, but I've been looking at setting aside a lot more time for that. What is your opinion on the CE5 protocols?
They work. I don't know if they work for everybody, but a lot of people have tried them and said that they work. And these entities in their craft are coming into their environment. Sometimes they communicate telepathically. I know some people who have actually had them materialize in front of them. And I have taken part in these CE5 protocols, and sometimes we have had certain things occur. I in my first experiment, I attempted to call in a craft. I told them earlier in the day that I'd love to see their craft. I had a green triangle show up, kind of a fluorescent green.
Oh, wow.
In, outside my home in the clouds. It looked fairly large, you know, about the size of my thumbnail or larger. Think of the full moon as being the size of an aspirin at arm's length. And I didn't know for certain what it was. My husband didn't look at it, but he said, oh, that's probably fireworks in somewhere in one of the neighboring towns.
Yeah.
Well, the next day I looked in MUFON's files and I looked elsewhere and I discovered that there were a group of people in the next town over who saw the same craft.
Oh, wow.
So I was pleased with that. I've been with others who we've been told to go outside and look and we would see things. I've never seen craft as close as I would like to see it in any of these experiments. I've seen craft that has come in and I've watched it come in as a red orange craft coming from the distance, and then suddenly it will just like explode in front of me. And I have been shown a whirling circle over my lake, about 35 to 40 feet in diameter. It is not a school of fish swimming very rapidly. It's not a duck in the center paddling.
Wow.
This is a turbulence in the lake. I've been shown three grayish orbs with amber centers bobbing along my lawn. So I've been shown a number of things by these entities that we learned about in this experiment that I talk about in the book.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible. And the before we let you go, one last question that I had for you. The Council of Eight.
Yes.
If you can, explain that to the audience real quick, because the Council of Eight is, of course, prominently featured in Forbidden Knowledge. What is the Council of Eight, Kathleen?
I have just talked about an experiment that researchers and investigators and I took part in. It was a secret project that ran for a period of 2 years. We were charged with the invitation to study this, to attempt to acquire scientific evidence that it was real, or to simply dismiss it. Was the man involved in communicating with these non-human entities delusional? Was he attempting to perpetrate a fraud on us? Or could we experience evidence that this was real? We, in the end, were able to measure a temperature change in the room when they came in to introduce themselves. It for the fifth and sixth dimensionals, it was more than a 5-degree increase in the area of the room where they were standing. For the ninth dimensionals, there were 2 ninth dimensionals, there was more than an 8-degree temperature increase as measured with a laser thermometer. We could feel a very strong electrical tingling in our bodies in their presence. It was what I believe was as scientific as we could possibly be in this study. We invited skeptics to come in as well, eventually, and the skeptics saw nothing of what we were able to see. And what I was able to conclude, and others who took part, is those of us who could get into our right brains through meditation, for example, by raising our vibrational frequency, were able to experience these phenomena that we could see and we could feel in our bodies. But those who were in the left brain and who were vibrating at a lower frequency were not able to. So it was an incredible experiment. I've devoted almost half of the book, I believe, Forbidden Knowledge, to this, opening up this forbidden knowledge that first came into the U.S. government and the Canadian government officials' lives in 1954.
Yeah, yeah. Programs like Operation Stargate, stuff like that, where they were, you know, full-on testing remote viewing. That kind of stuff that people like Hal Puthoff were involved with that.
All
kinds of things. And just like Stephen Greer says, I just actually watched the documentary about CE5 again yesterday as I was sitting out in the living room working on a website. And yeah, just the idea that they're more scared of this because individuals are able to make that contact outside of their system.
Yes, absolutely. And since the government had the opportunity to meet these non-humans and to even be given pieces of technology and to be able to move us along on an evolutionary scale and to make our lives easier, no government in the world would do this because no one was willing to share this with other countries in order to put all of this together to develop this technology. And so what the ETs did is they went to the people.
Yeah.
And they said that eventually more than 50% of the population will know this is real, and they will, at that point, there will be a tipping point.
Yeah.
And everyone will know, and everyone will be raising that vibration, which so many people around the world are doing through these CE5 contact experiences and through meditation today.
Yep. And just like he says in that documentary, you know, the experiment of the hydrogen atoms in stasis, where it takes only 1% of them to coalesce into one vibrational state for the rest of them to follow suit. It doesn't take that much. I mean, the point we make on this show all the time, Kathleen, is that it less than 20% of the American public took place in the American Revolution.
Yes.
Less than 20. It took less than 20% to change that tide and to change the way that we all live our lives now, every one of us. So it doesn't take an overwhelming majority to change the way things are. And I think that's where most people's mindset is, sadly, is that they think that, like, until 80% of people accept this, that it's not going to happen. And that's not the case.
I believe that you're correct in this. And people only need to open themselves up to learn and to learn how to protect themselves, too, because there is negativity that can come in. And I've written about all of that in Forbidden Knowledge and some of it in Extraterrestrial Contact, too, and what to do about that, how to protect yourself.
Yep. Yeah, because you really do have to remember that anytime you're doing that, you're peering through a window. That window looks both ways. You got to make sure to shut the curtains behind you, so to speak.
I know of a few people who wanted so badly to make contact that they ended up with negative reptilians in their lives. So be careful what you wish for. Make sure you have the knowledge before you undergo this endeavor.
Well, and of course, make sure that your intentions are right and pure and doing what you're doing. You know, you can't have any selfish intent with it. That will bring that negative attraction. So,
absolutely.
Absolutely great advice there, Kathleen. But before we let you go, please do let everybody know where they can go to find your books, where they can go to contact you, where they can go to file reports. And actively share their abduction experience if they are somebody who has thusly been affected?
Well, you can purchase autographed copies of my books at Kathleen with a K dash Marden, M-A-R-D-E-N .com via PayPal, or you can purchase my books in multiple formats at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other online bookstores. Forbidden Knowledge is available on my website and at Amazon. At the present time, it's just been released. And so in terms of making your reports of talking to people, you can go to the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON.com. Try to get in touch with members of the Experiencer. It's called Resource Team Now. They have a list of support groups. They have a list of qualified mental health practitioners who believe that ET contact is real, of hypnotists and hypnotherapists. So there is a lot of information. You can go to my website and look through it first, read what it has. If you having positive contact or you have overcome the negativity and fear in your life, I am one of four people who formed a support group called the Awakening Souls, and you can apply to become a member of that. And you can also contact me through my website. I offer 1 hour consultations for a small price. I decided to start charging because I didn't have a life of my own. I had to do my own work. I have to support myself.
Absolutely. So,
I had to make that decision.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you so much for coming on, taking the time to discuss this, what I believe is truly important topic. As we discuss on this show so much, there is what I believe is to be a veneer being put over the disclosure movement right now. Whenever you start seeing and hearing the media using terms like UFO denier, that kind of stuff, you really need to watch out, because the last 60, 70 years, that has not been the case. It has been, hey, some whack job in Detroit saw a UFO. Here's the story coming up at 10. Stuff like that. So for there to be such a hard pivot in mentality, I think that we need to bring things like advocacy for experiencers to the forefront, and really get ahead of this thing before things get maybe a little bit out of control within a community.
Absolutely.
Things can get out of control rapidly, and I think that some of it has already happened. So to know that there are people like you out there, people like Sev, who are working with experiencers, I cannot think of two better advocates for that. So thank you so much for all that you do for the community, for all your years and years of research, and for caring so much about those who have experienced this, Kathleen.
It's been my pleasure. It's my life's work. And thank you so much. It was great talking with you today.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from Kathleen, please do make sure to stop on by The Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. You can check out Curious Realm 24/7. Hop on by the page. You will get a random episode played for you. You can hop on by the live page and check out all of our live streams from upcoming events like the MUFON Symposium, folks. We are very proud to be a sponsor of this upcoming symposium this year. Cannot wait to be speaking to all of the speakers, all of the folks out on the expo floor this upcoming July from that. Take care of yourselves, everybody. Take care of each other. And remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.